listening to the ESP, the European Skeptics Podcast, an independent weekly show set out to bring you news, interesting topics and interviews with people mostly from Europe, building bridges and breaking down language barriers to show the world how active and awesome the skeptical movement is in the region. This is episode 418. I'm your host, Annika Harrison, and with me this week are my co-hosts, Pontus. Pontus, where are you? And Andras? Andras? Guys? Well, yeah, as you can tell, we weren't able to get together this week. We just had so many scheduling issues. And yeah, that's why I'm here alone. But I won't leave you hanging just like that, because we got together with Brian Ego for a very interesting interview. You know Brian, of course, as a very nice guest host of our show. He has been on 20 episodes guest hosting. One of that was episode 37, which was very close to his first interview with us, which was episode 32. And then he came back again and again and again. was part of the live recording at QED, of another live recording at QED. And he has been on the show several times, but now we decided to turn the tables on him and flip the switch and have him back as an interviewee. And we spoke a bit about his journey to skepticism, but most importantly about his own research in regards to cancer cures. And yeah, so without me talking any longer by myself, here is Brian Ego and our interview. Every now and then, we interview someone whose work is of interest to our listeners and skeptics around Europe. Today, our guest is Brian Ego, who has been interviewed on episode 32. Oh. Yes, you heard that right. It's a two-digit number. He is the leader of Glasgow Skeptics and part of Skeptics in the Pub Glasgow and online, as far as I know. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me back. This is weird, because usually I'm here as guest presenter, but now I'm kind of under the microscope again, so you've kind of caught me in the crossfire at the moment.
Yeah, you've been promoted to official interview victim now.
Yes.
So it's been a while since we did that, as Annika said.
Is that a promotion, is it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a pay rise with that?
I hope so.
Probably not.
Yeah, we'll double the zero that you got the last time.
Excellent, yes. Thank you.
Yes.
So, for people who do not maybe know you, Brian, even though I think around 20 times you've been on the show so far, but it's been a while now, I think. You're also known as Eggman, is that right?
Eggman, yep.
Eggman.
Anything egg-related because of my weird surname is acceptable in terms of how you address me.
Right. So, maybe you want to start with a short introduction to you, yourself, and your skeptical history, if you will.
Okay, well, as Annika said, right now I look after Glasgow Skeptics. I'm part of the Skeptics in the Pub Online team. I also occasionally write for the Skeptic magazine, although my output has been a little bit less of late for various non-fun family reasons. But in terms of how I got involved with skepticism, well, it was really when I met my now wife, Laura. So listeners, for those of you in the throes of a young romance, you probably know the one of the sexiest times you have when you first meet somebody is when you, you compare your podcast listening preferences, And when I did that with Laura, she said that she listened to a couple of podcasts about skepticism, which I'd never heard of. So she told me what it was and put me on to Skeptics with a K and The Reality Check, the Canadian podcast. And I was immediately really taken by both of them. After which we started going along to Glasgow Skeptics. Glasgow Skeptics had been running for a couple of years at that point. And so, we started going along as punters, and then I gradually wormed my way into the upper echelons of Glasgow Skeptics. There are not many echelons there, but I managed to weasel my way in. And then when the founder, Ian, got a job down in London, I took over. And it's been all downhill ever since, right?
Yeah. So this is what you did there, or what you still do, is the monthly Skeptics in the Pub talks, right?
Correct. Yeah. We do monthly talks. in Glasgow in person. And with the Skeptics and the Pub Online team, we've been running since the pandemic started. We do monthly online talks with them too as well. So, and, you know, I help in the background with organisation. I'll occasionally do MC duties. In fact, I might be on MC duties later this month. That's to be confirmed, but I've penciled my name in there now. So look out for that. I'm going to be giving some sweet intros, just like you guys have been doing for me, in a couple of weeks' time for the online team.
Mm, great. So yeah, you mentioned Skeptics in the Pub Online. That's something that appeared with the pandemic. One of the few good things that came from the pandemic, right? Can you tell us a little bit of what that is, if people are not aware?
Sure, yeah. So, as you said, it came out of the pandemic when, obviously, all of the local skeptic groups in the UK and further afield had to stop running face-to-face talks. So we decided that it would be a good idea to try and put something on online. So thankfully, you know, with a collection of great minds and me, we had enough people together and enough technical know-how in order to do effective streaming of our talks. Now, I know everybody is like been on like a million Zoom calls since the pandemic started, and there's, you know, you're used to like various YouTube channels or what have you, but I've got to say, like, in terms of production values, the Skeptics and the Pub Online team, like the techie guys, you know, David, Igor, Malcolm, Matty and co, do a fantastic work in making our productions look incredibly professional in terms of those values. So we can source a speaker from anywhere in the world and have done so. We've had speakers from most of the continents that are regularly inhabited and we put on a talk. And it gives the audience a chance to get involved as well, right? Because not only is it a lecture, the audience have the chance to ask questions as well. And we put those questions to the speaker. And then after everything finishes in terms of the online broadcast, we all hop onto our virtual pub, the Lock-ins Razor, which is like a Zoom room. So there's a social aspect to it as well. So, and that's after each talk, we're in the Lock-ins Razor, but also every single Thursday. So if you're ever bored on a Thursday evening, go to sitp.online and follow the link for the virtual pub, and you can come and meet us in Zoom and enjoy some witty, skeptical banter and usually discussions about sandwiches and other nonsense as well. So as well as a good set of content we've built up over these 3 or so years, we've built up a community as well, which is nice. And a lot of that community is enthusiastic and will probably be coming towards Manchester come late October as well. Mm. Hopefully you guys are all already aware of the QED announcement, right?
Yes, we are. We are.
Yes, we are.
Good stuff.
Something we always gladly and happily and eagerly await.
Yeah. But the Skeptics in the Pub Online did something that I wanted the UK skeptical community to do for a long time, namely starting to collaborate. But when I got involved first with the skepticism, and I got in contact with Marsh and the others of the UK skeptics, I was a little bit taken aback that every city or even town did their own skeptical thing, and they hardly knew each other. Well, some of them knew each other a little bit, but it was very decentralized, to put it diplomatically. Whereas in Sweden, where I come from, we have one big central organization. There's a lot of local activities going on, but there is one sort of umbrella organization to coordinate things and actually to supply a little bit of money sometimes. And in the UK, it was more every man for himself.
Yeah, I think the Swedish model has benefits to it. Although, like, the informal nature of how things work over in the UK maybe allows groups to be a little bit more independent and not have to rely on others. But again, another good thing that's come out of the pandemic is we are much closer aligned now. Now, pre-pandemic, I think, you know, certainly I had good relations with the closest groups to us geographically, most notably the Edinburgh Skeptics, right? And I think you would see the same, obviously, like Merseyside and Manchester, skeptics were closely aligned, and you know, like Newcastle and Teesside had a good relationship, and the London groups did, right? Now we've got a much more collective ethos together, and we've got, as well as like the skeptics in the pub Discord server, we also have got like a Slack instance where we can message back and forward with each other, talk about our events, compare speakers, and we can offer assistance to other groups as well. So I guess you could say, Pontus, we're starting to do informally what you and Sweden are doing formally now.
Yeah, but there's differences to the countries as well. Sweden is a much less populated country, so it's easier. There are fewer of us, so we have to collaborate, if you will.
Yeah.
Whereas, but that we're basically, we're communists here. We always do everything. We get in line and we all join the big leader and we'll do what he or her, she tells us to. So everything works, I guess. But the reason we wanted to bring you on, Brian, was that you've mentioned Laura already, your wife, your now wife. Something happened to her a couple of years ago, which was very disturbing for the rest of us as well. We were very alarmed by this, but something good came out of it. Maybe you should take that story from the start.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I guess any family or any tight-knit group are going to have cancer come knocking at some point in their lives. And 2021 was when it came knocking for us and Laura in particular. So yeah, she had a lump in her breast. And at the time she was breastfeeding her young child and thought it might have been a blocked milk duct or a duct or something like that. And maybe left it a little bit longer than she should before going to the doctors, but eventually did go to the doctors. And, you know, the output of that was a biopsy and a positive diagnosis of breast cancer. So, you know, let's give a spoiler alert. Laura is still very much with us. She is a cancer survivor. She is thriving.
Mm.
We have no current evidence of any disease, although, you know, we're on hyper alert, right? But Laura went through, you know, a brutal treatment plan. Anybody who's had breast cancer or any other form of cancer will know that the conventional treatment you get is not fun. 0 stars for enjoyment, but 5 stars for effectiveness. So, So Laura's been through multiple operations. She's been through chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and is on a many, many year program of hormonal drugs to hopefully prevent things coming back. But you know, again, another silver lining that I took from that diagnosis and Laura's cancer journey was I took it as an opportunity to delve a little bit deeper into the world of alternative health groups online, most notably Facebook, and try and figure out how bad the information is out there for people who go looking in those alternative routes, how misleading it can be, what type of variety of recommendations you might get, whether you are persuaded to stop conventional treatment or to not go for conventional treatment. So I did a pretty detailed investigation into a number of Facebook groups and what they would recommend for my wife's cancer.
Yeah, that sounds like definitely what a skeptic would do, is to look at the one thing that you can do, and yeah, use your skeptical activism in a dire situation. So, what happened when you went to these Facebook groups?
Okay, so let's be very clear. I am not a scientist. I am not a health professional, right? But I tried to be as objective as possible when doing this investigation. So first things first, find some groups, right? So I go onto Facebook and I go looking for Facebook groups. I search things like, you know, cancer cure or cancer support. I also search for some known woo that we're all aware of. I go searching for homeopathy groups and urine therapy groups and other things like that, right?
The nice stuff, yeah.
Yeah, all the fun stuff, right? And I get myself a list of 50 Facebook groups. and I was able to join 47 of them. Only a few of them knocked me back. Most of them were actually open access, but a few you had to sort of apply to join them, answer a few questions and such like. So I managed to get into 47 of those groups. And then my plan was to post an identical message in all of those groups.
Ah, you're doing this scientifically.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. So the message I was putting in was essentially, my wife has been diagnosed with breast cancer. What would you recommend? Conventional treatment, alternative, or both, right? So it was essentially that message I was put in. If it was a homeopathy group, then replace alternative treatment with homeopathy, right? So if it was a very specific modality, the message was conventional treatment, that specific modality, or both, right? And essentially wait and see what answers I got. So I was only able to post in 20 of those groups. Some of the posts got knocked back. Some of them, I don't think the groups were well moderated and they were just weren't approved. So I managed to get 20 messages into various groups in that identical manner. And then I would just sit back and wait and see what came in my direction. And my goodness me, a lot of stuff came in my direction.
Everybody wanted to help.
Everybody wanted to help. And look, I guess let's be clear, right? I think you don't know exactly what's in somebody's heart, right? But I think the majority of people did want to help. Some people wanted to make money, but others just wanted to help, right? So I don't want to disrespect any of those true believers out there. I think they're wrong, but I think their hearts are in the right place in terms of wanting to help people in a desperate situation, right?
Mm.
But I got 499 comments. Did it annoy me that it wasn't 500?
Yes.
Yes. But it was 499, right? So, and then what I attempted to do again to try and be objective is look at those comments and figure out, okay, did they recommend alternative treatment only? Did they recommend alternative and conventional treatment? Did they recommend conventional treatment only? Or was it something else, right? When we say something else, there was lots of comments like, I'm very sorry to hear that, thoughts and prayers, whatever, like nice messages, right? So I couldn't classify everything, right? But you'll not be surprised to hear that the vast majority of comments I got were recommendations for alternative treatment, right? Just under 75% of those comments were recommending alternative treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any reasons that they gave for that? Or did they just, you should try this because maybe you'll get it to that. But were they already at the first interaction where they're saying, you shouldn't do this conventional thing because it's dangerous, you should do this instead? Or what kind of recommendations did you get?
Yeah, so it was a mixed bag, right? You know, some people were saying, I did this, it cured me, or I am a practitioner of this, you should do this, it will cure you. Only a small percentage, like less than 10%, specifically said, do not do conventional treatment, right? Most of them didn't mention conventional treatment at all.
Oh.
They just said, here's what I recommend, right? And again, and even in there, right, it's hard to classify because if somebody says, okay, I can give you a homeopathic treatment that will cure your wife's cancer, that's very specific, right? Didn't get a lot of comments like that. A lot of ones just started throwing out like, oh, do this, 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 and this. They didn't say it would cure. Maybe they were saying like, here's a regimen which might help prevent it coming back or prevent it getting worse, right? They weren't specific about that, right? But essentially they were saying, here's some stuff to try, right? And it was so varied. I think you could tell the people who were in those groups more and maybe the ones that were more grifters because it looked as if there was a lot of copying and pasting going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like a couple of the comments I got were more than 500 words. A couple of them were over 1,000 words with just massive long lists and testimonies and stuff. So clearly it's people who are hovering around these groups waiting for someone who's looking for help and they're trying to pounce on them, right? So,
wow.
So it was such a mixed bag, and it was kind of overwhelming, right? So as well as kind of like trying to classify those responses, I also sort of itemized them as best as I could as well, right? Some sort of into categories, like, oh, like these are our supplements. And then I tried to sort of define the specific supplements that they were recommending, right? All sorts of various bizarre things you may or may not have heard of, right? Lots of things about vitamin C, lots of things about like mushrooms, different types of mushrooms that might help, and various kind of products that you could buy online, vitamin supplements and so on. Lots of recommendations for cannabis oil, most specifically this Rick Simpson oil treatment. A lot of recommendations for fenbendazole. Have you guys heard of fenbendazole?
No.
No.
Can't say I have.
No. You may not have, unless do either of you have a dog.
Yes.
You do. Okay. So if your dog's ever had worms, then it may have been diagnosed fenbendazole by your vet.
Oh, God.
In the same way that, like, ivermectin became a popular thing for COVID,
yeah,
fenbendazole has become a popular alternative recommendation for cancer treatment, which is really bizarre. Oh, I was recommended ivermectin for my wife's cancer as well, by the way. You know,
I was thinking maybe.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
That happened.
Ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine as well, like the favorites of the COVID alternative treatment, were recommended for my wife's cancer as well.
Wow. So that just means that these people, they have no grasp of anything really, because it's totally different. How could it help? If it kills worms in dogs, why should that help fighting cancer in humans?
Fighting cancer. Well, you know, they might provide a mechanism, of course, right? But, you know, in terms of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, they're kind of being touted as a sort of a panacea, like a cure-all, right?
Yeah.
And talking of cure-alls as well, like, if, you know, there were recommendations for MMS, mineral supplement, which is, you know, the sort of industrial bleach solution that's been touted as a cure for, you know, AIDS and all sorts of other stuff as well. There was recommendations for black salve. I don't know if you've ever heard of black salve. I think you may have mentioned it on previous podcasts.
Yeah.
We have. That one we have heard about. We don't really want to hear about it, but please tell us anyway. Because it's a nasty thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a highly caustic substance, which is mostly recommended for skin cancer, actually. But folks, don't Google image search black salve, because you'll see it has some pretty horrific impact on your skin, and kind of melts away your whatever part of your body you put it on. So, like, you know, there was a vast amount of different recommendations there, right? Of course, the homeopathy folks, I got, you know, immediately DM'd by some homeopaths saying that they could treat my wife's cancer because of me posting in a homeopathic group. The urine therapy people think if my wife started to drink urine or apply urine to the breast, it could help with the breast cancer.
Mm.
Various supplements, Gerson therapy. Let me be very clear, because I know they are occasionally litigious. The Gerson therapy group that I posted in, the administrators of the group were very clear, saying we cannot give recommendations for treatment.
Mm.
However, please look at all of our user testimonies, right? And I did have some other people recommending Gerson therapy as well.
Yeah, that's very popular. Even the king, your king, Chuck the Third, he has now.
Yeah. Well, let's now that he's on, appears to be on the wrong end of a cancer diagnosis himself.
Well, not now, I should say, but he has in the past mentioned Gerson therapy.
Yes, he has. He has mentioned it in the past. Now that he's on the wrong side of a cancer diagnosis, we'll have to wait and see how
many coffee enemas he will get.
Keen he really is on alternative treatment, or whether he's going to take the safe bet as many people do and go conventional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what was the most ridiculous cure that you encountered?
There were a number of things, right? And I did make an effort whenever I was recommended something low cost, like less than a tenner, that I would go ahead and buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the favorite thing that I was recommended that I actually bought was a book called Curing Cancer with Carrots.
Oh.
So there's somebody who thinks that you can actually just use carrots in order to cure your cancer, to the point where they wrote a book about it and published it, and you can buy it on Amazon. So
wow.
I've got it sitting at home. I don't have it close to hand. I would show you. You're just going to have to believe me, right? So that was my personal favorite.
Mm.
Although, I mean, there was lots of weird and wacky stuff out there. There's even a YouTube video,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, can potentially cure your cancer for free.
What?
It just, all it plays is a particular frequency of sound, and they believe that that frequency of
just
sound...
Just by watching the video, you'll be cured.
Yeah, or just listening to that video, the frequency of the sound is going to melt away your tumours, apparently, right? So
amazing stuff.
I think that was particularly entertaining because it's just like a YouTube video. All the other stuff, like, I think people get the most entertainment out of urine therapy because, like, that's always fun, right? And people do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's cheaper.
Pee and poop.
I mean, it's very easy to get hold of, you know, particularly at my age, you know.
I think we're all toddlers in a way of, like, pee and poop.
Yeah. Exactly, right? So, yeah, I would say in terms of ridiculous, like, those were the top of my list. But, hey, you know, take your own pick, audience members. I can give you a long list and you can pick from that.
Mm. So what would you say was the most dangerous advice you got?
I guess any time there was recommendations to stop conventional treatment, right?
Mm.
Because if I think across all of the ridiculous stuff that was recommended, right? Supplements, they cost money. They generally don't do harm. Urine therapy, not a lot of fun, but doesn't do harm, right? You know, even things like obviously homeopathy is not going to do you any harm, right? But it was the ones that were saying, don't believe what your doctors tell you, right? So,
oh, wow, yeah.
There was a relatively common trend amongst a lot of people, not just saying, here's the things that your wife should do, but also here's the things that she shouldn't do, right? So don't just do conventional treatment, but also don't use deodorant, don't eat any GMOs, don't eat any sugar, don't eat any cooked food, right? There's someone that thinks everything that's been cooked, right, whether it's vegetarian or meat or whatever, is bad for you, right?
So that's the natural fallacy. Anything that is not natural, you shouldn't do.
Exactly. Mm. So those were the ones that I think were the most dangerous, right? A lot of it would have been very harmful to my wallet. You know, if I'd sent Laura to a clinic in Mexico, you know, I might have had to sell my house to pay for it or do a crowdfunder, as many people have done.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the stuff was benign, right? I suppose MMS is dangerous. Taking a dog dewormer, that can't do you any good, right?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the Gerson therapy, well, maybe not dangerous in and of itself, but, you know, sticking that amount of caffeine up your backside five times a day can't be good for you, right?
No.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, possibly that, right? But the real danger is, right, and, you know, there's studies to show this, if you opt for alternative treatment instead of conventional treatment, then there's, you know, the survival rate is considerably less, right? And that gap widens, obviously, as time goes on. So I'm very, very thankful that all that I did was just a thought experiment. I should be very clear. Like, Laura is a biomedical scientist. She's the one that told me about scientific skepticism.
Mm.
There was no chance that she would ever be going down these alternative routes, right? So just a thought experiment, really.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would made it easier for you, because I can see other people being in another situation where you are the skeptic in the house and the person who's sick are saying, well, maybe we should test it. And then you get on top of a very stressful situation to begin with, you get an internal stress because you can fight about this and you don't want to fight about things when things are bad already.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you know, if you'll allow me to digress a moment, like I have had that situation. Very tragically, late last year, my older brother was diagnosed with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Very late stage, very late diagnosis. The prognosis was very bad. And he passed away, what, less than 2 months after his diagnosis, right? So eight weeks.
It
fell away very, very quickly, right? Now,
that's terrible.
He was a very, very different person from me. Very out there. And, you know, when he got his diagnosis, he was wanting to opt for conventional treatment, right? But he did say to me, I'm going to try all of that alternative stuff that you go on about being useless, Brian. I'm going to try as much of that as I can. And at the time, like, I kept my mouth shut.
Mm.
It wasn't the time to start having arguments about, you know, efficacy of treatment,
no.
Particularly because he was happy with taking conventional treatment anyway, right?
Mm.
But at the back of my head, I was thinking, well, if he's going to opt for something that's going to cost tens of thousands of pounds and put him and, you know, maybe my parents or maybe even me into massive amount of debt, then I'd be pushing back on that.
Mm-hmm.
If he was going to attempt to opt for something that was physically dangerous, like MMS, I would have pushed back on that.
Mm.
Now, as it turns out, his condition was so bad and his deterioration was so quick, he wasn't even able to get conventional treatment, let alone any alternative.
Ah.
So we never had the opportunity or to come to blows over anything like that, right? But I think it's important to differentiate. The type of prognosis that Laura got was a very good one. She was relatively young, very healthy. They caught the cancer, not early, but certainly not late stage.
Mm.
In the case of my brother, it was late stage. The prognosis was very bad from the start.
Yeah.
And I can understand someone being in a position like that thinking, well, what have I got to lose?
Mm.
You know, and again, for the true believers and for anybody opting for these treatments, if they're doing it as a last throw of the dice and they've already gone through conventional treatment and it hasn't worked for them, I guess it's okay. As long as it's not putting them in any discomfort or causing their family to have a financial burden.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not always the case. We've heard some horror stories, right? But also think about this. Here's a thought experiment for you, Pontus and Annika and dear listeners, right? So let's imagine. Now, my brother did manage to get some Reiki treatment.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of his who's a little bit hippy dippy arranged for a Reiki practitioner to come into the hospital and do some treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it did nothing. Obviously, it was useless, right? But let's imagine a situation where my brother went into spontaneous remission.
Mm.
Do you think the Reiki practitioner would be taking credit? How much credit would be given to Reiki if that happened? And I did find online some stories or claims similar to that. This person had stage 4, late stage cancer. They'd given up on conventional treatment and then they had Reiki and now they're all better again. Now, I don't believe those stories, right? But we do know that sometimes the diagnosis you get is incorrect, spontaneous remission can happen. And then suddenly this harmless alternative treatment that you did just as an attempt, you know, a throw of the dice, suddenly becomes the savior.
Yeah.
And you start preaching about it.
Mm.
I think a lot of people, when I was posting in these alternative health groups, were in that situation. They'd maybe had conventional treatment and alternative treatment and give way too much credit to the alternative treatment. Maybe they were misdiagnosed as having cancer and they took alternative treatment and now they are convinced that alternative treatment has saved them, right?
Mm.
So, you know, these are the most dangerous types of true believers. Again, like, their merits are good, their intentions are good, but they've been deceived by, you know, what has happened to them in terms of their diagnosis and their recovery.
Mm.
Yeah. And the tragic of it is that since they survived, they are still there to propagate their story, their side of the story. And the tragic thing is that for the people who didn't make it, they're not around anymore to tell their story.
Yeah.
So all you hear are the positive stories.
Exactly.
And that can be very convincing.
Yeah. Survivorship bias for sure. But I should say as well, in many of these groups, there are many stories of people passing away, even though they're taking these conventional treatments.
Mm.
And, you know, on those cases, the comments tend to be along the lines of, they didn't get the protocol right, or it was too late for them, it was past the point of no return, and so on and so forth, right? But there's an interesting kind of cognitive dissonance in terms of people dying and it being publicized in these groups right alongside people who are claiming that it's an amazing cure-all, right? So the harm done by these type of communities, I think, is hard to measure, but it's harm nonetheless. And I guess with that in mind, I should say as well, I did attempt to get all 50 of those Facebook groups closed down.
Mm.
I reported every single one of them for harmful misinformation. And Facebook's stance on harmful content is supposedly stronger post-pandemic. I think they were stung into action, or at least the semblance of action, when COVID-19 came along. So my attempts to close down those Facebook groups, you report every single one of them and you give some reasons and you give some references. Some references, they've got specific, Facebook's policies have some specific comments about products or methods of treatment that are physically harmful. And it specifically mentions Black Salve and MMS. Mm-hmm. So I gave them examples of those.
Mm-hmm.
So guessing game, listeners and Pontus and Annika, how many of those 50 Facebook groups were closed down?
Well, none of them, I'm sure.
Two.
I'm very, very cynical. I don't think they'd do anything about it.
You're correct. It's none. Mm. And now, obviously, it doesn't help that I have very limited or no influence and power, because I'm just a dude, right?
Mm.
So my expectations were low and those expectations were met. But I should say as well, like, Laura and I appeared on a BBC television program called Dr. Zan's Corner Cure about this very thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the BBC got a statement from Facebook about misinformation, but a statement is all they got. It was a mealy-mouthed kind of, we do our best to combat misinformation, medical misinformation. But none of those groups got closed down, even after we'd been on television and the BBC had raised it with them, right?
Uh-huh.
And I should say as well, all of the YouTube videos I was recommended, I reported them. None of them got taken down either.
Yeah.
I reported many things on X/Twitter. Nothing was removed there. I was recommended a lot of books on Amazon. Amazon doesn't appear to even have any mechanism of reporting that sort of thing. So, you know, I don't want to direct all of my spite and bile towards Facebook. It was just, that's the platform I use the most. It was the most effective way of good doing an investigation. But all of the social media platforms are there. And I'm going to bring Google in there as well, right? Because a lot of the things that I was recommended, you can find sponsored adverts on Google for as well. So,
yeah.
You know, they're as compliant in this sort of web of medical misinformation as anybody, right? But like the lessons to learn out of this are, well, don't expect social media companies to effectively police themselves. That's not going to happen. The way we get around this is by making sure that, you know, you and the people that you love have got reasonable critical thinking skills and have enough knowledge and ability to spot a scam when they see it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Wow. But interestingly enough, I think through Skeptics in the Pub Online, you do have experience with things being shut down, but that has been us, the good side, right?
Yeah.
Hasn't that happened?
It has. So we, you know, some examples come to mind. One of our talks was about the QAnon conspiracy, and we were unable to advertise that event because they thought we were promoting conspiracy theories. So, you know, I guess in that respect, there are algorithms out there that are attempting to quash that sort of thing, but they are, you know, hopelessly flawed.
Yes.
And I know, like, recently on Skeptics with a K and on Cognitive Dissonance, they've spoken about videos being taken down. A QED video has been taken down. Cognitive Dissonance are completely off YouTube at the moment. They've got like a 2-month ban for medical misinformation because they have a sort of a skeptic's creed at the very end of each podcast, which talks about, you know, nonsense cures and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So the social media algorithms really, really struggle to distinguish between misinformation and well-meaning skeptics trying to educate people about the aforementioned medical misinformation. So it's not a good picture.
Oh.
And I don't see it getting any better anytime soon.
No, but it's very frustrating. Now, so what good, if anything, has come out of all this adventure you've had with Laura and the cancer and the skeptical research you've done?
Well, as I say, we've managed to bring some attention to the issue, and I think that's as good as it gets. So as well as being on that Conor Cure programme, we appeared in the Scottish News one evening as well. There was a couple of articles in the newspaper about it, and that means that this sceptical message got in front of people who don't normally know or haven't heard about our movement, and maybe hadn't heard about quite how bad the medical misinformation is, right? So we got the word out. Is it going to make a dent? Well, you know, that and all the other great science communicators and skeptical communicators and fantastic podcasts like this one is I think the best we can do in order to try and help people not be fooled when the worst type of news comes in their direction, you know?
Yeah, and teaching maybe like critical thinking, especially in social media for students, like for young kids or for older kids and teenagers. I think that's also something that's just really important.
Yeah. I think so. And like for folks at school, and it's been a long time since I was at school, right? Or even since my older kids were at school, right? So I'm not particularly au fait with the curriculum here in Scotland, right? But digital literacy is certainly something that everybody needs to be good with, right?
Yeah.
From a young age, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's quite easy to roll in some basic critical thinking along the way there, right? Because if digital literacy includes how to spot misinformation, how to spot a scam, and so on and so forth. So you can use those very basic concepts and just to give people a grounding in looking for that, right? So I certainly have hopes that as we become, and as the younger generation become more embedded with the internet and with social media, that they might learn along the way. I don't necessarily know. I'm not sure how good the stats are, but it can only get better, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, right, for us oldies, not you, Annika, but oldies like Pontus and I, right, when we were subject to scams, it was usually by telephone calls to your landline or by somebody turning up at your door, right? And the word gets around, right? You kind of, you know, you talk as adults about these type of things that happen and how people get fooled and what have you. Maybe somebody in the older generation got fooled by somebody coming to their door, right? So I think young people are going to be having those type of discussions with their friends and with their colleagues and with their teachers about the type of things that they see online. Right. Everybody knows, for example, right, if you're on Instagram or whatever, you put a filter on somebody's face to make them look nicer. Most kids know that's not what they really look like if you bump into them face to face, right? So if we start to embed a little bit of healthy disbelief in what they see, then maybe that can work its way forward. But we'll see. There's always going to be scams out there. There's always going to be true believers out there as well with really compelling stories. And we just got to keep chipping away at that.
Yeah.
You can only try.
You mentioned teachers, and of course we have Annika here. She is a teacher. I'm sure she is doing her best with her pupils. But there are some good teachers out there. I know a handful of teachers here in Sweden who the Swedish skeptics, we do have a contact with them. They come to us and say, I need help with this. Can you come and talk about this? There's one school that every year they have a full day discussing different beliefs and belief systems. So it's a lot about religion, but they're also inviting the humanists and the skeptics to give another point of view. And there are good forces out there, and I hope they can make a difference. Because we need to reach the younger generations. They are our only hope.
For sure. Yeah, well, look, if there's any schools listening, they want to hook me up, I happily come in and talk to you all about skepticism. Probably not as well. I may have to steal some of your materials, Pontus.
That's fine.
And Google Translate it into English. But yeah, absolutely.
You're welcome to it. All right.
If there's anyone who wants to meet you or get in contact with you, you already mentioned Skeptics in the Pub online, but how else could people contact you or Yeah, me too.
So if you're ever in Glasgow on the third Tuesday of a month, then come and see us at the Admiral Woods Bar. That's our spiritual home where all of our talks go on. And yeah, Skeptics in the Pub Online, fourth Thursday of each month. If I'm not emceeing, I'll probably be in the comments area somewhere and probably in the virtual pub afterwards. Otherwise, if you want to hit me up, look for @BrianEggo on the social medias, or email anything at glasgowskeptics.com and it will come to me. But hey, if you want to see me face to face, I'm going to be at QED in October, and the Skeptics and the Pub Online team will be running the Skeptic Camp again, as we've done before, right?
So awesome.
I'll be there or thereabouts on the Friday and then wandering about for the rest of the weekend for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah, great. Had that been announced that there will be a Skeptic Camp on Friday?
The announcement did include a Friday Skeptic Camp.
Oh, they did?
It did, yes.
Okay, good. Great.
And the Skeptics and the Pub Online team have run it very well.
They have.
For the past couple of years now, and we will be doing exactly the same thing again this year.
Yeah.
So Nil 32 was at liberty to discuss that.
Very good. Okay, so I will go and try to think of a new topic for this year and apply.
Please do. Yes.
To give a talk there. That is always a great fun. And the dates are for QED?
QED will be taking place on Saturday the 19th and Sunday the 20th of October. And the Skeptic Camp will be on Friday the 18th.
Yeah.
At the Mercure Piccadilly Hotel in Manchester.
Ah, yeah. Great.
Okay, 18th to 20th.
Perfect.
Mark it in your calendars.
Yes. All right.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Brian, for coming on the show again, this time as an interview victim.
It's been a blast. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Also, thank you for opening up about pretty much a personal story there. So I think that was very interesting for our listeners and for us to get to know these details and also all the research you did with the Facebook group. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and our regards to Laura, of course, as well, mm-hmm. who also took part of a panel debate at the previous QED last year.
Yeah.
It's very, very important that this information gets out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. And hey, and Laura will be at QED as well. So feel free to administer her with hugs and gin and tonics.
Ah, will do. Will do.
Will the little Easter egg over there too?
She will be there, absolutely.
Awesome, Brian. Yeah, so thanks again for having been on the show, and we'll very likely hear from you again.
For sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks a lot.
Yes, so that was the interview, guys. I hope you liked it as much as we did. Brian is just such an amazing person and friend, and we love having him again and again on the show. So thank you, Brian, for that. We really hoped seeing you all, everyone who can make it, at QED in October. So this was a bit of a special episode, but we are looking forward to come back to you guys with a regular episode next time. And thank you to our listeners for coming back week after week. We couldn't do it without you. So yeah, see you next time. Goodbye. Wie's lad. Tschüss. Heidel.
This has been your ESP Experience. The show is produced and recorded by the ESP.eu. Join us again next time, but until then, please send your feedback, comment, or death threat to info@theesp.eu. We would also love to hear your ideas and suggestions regarding future episodes, as well as news from your country of residence that might interest others across the continent. If you have a local event or organization to promote, please don't hesitate to let us know, as we are more than happy to help. All music in the program was written and performed by Keisha J. Gray and George Shrub and is used with their permission. Please check out our webpage at theesp.eu, follow us on Twitter at @espodcast_eu, and like us on Facebook.
I don't know how you can believe.
Just to...
Yes.
Is it worthwhile doing funny faces? Would that help?
I don't know.
Was that Brian? Did you do it?
She's, well, it seems to be working a bit.
It's going
to
make her cry even more.
What's that, Brian?
I just ate everybody on the Zoom call there. Tasty.
Yeah, well, she can't hear you, I think.
Then Brian had alle gegessen.
That's okay. Here comes some big hands now.
You're scaring me now. I don't know if I can go. How am I supposed to get to sleep tonight?
What's that,
she's just like really confused now. I'm going to confuse her more. Right, hold on a second. Let's see. Okay.
Boy.
In the last kleine Spielzeug mit dem kleinen Ritter.
Ah, das ist aber, glaube ich, nicht gut, Schatzi. Möchtest du das hier haben?
Luna's had her head replaced by a microphone. It's a standard German medical intervention, right?
It was just a question of time because she's grown up with podcasting, so...
There you go. She's part human, part microphone already.
That's right.